This is Ref22, a monthly webinar for reference librarians, brought to you by ASCWA and the Washington State Library. Find out more at www.sos.wa.gov/quicklinks/ref22.
Hello, everybody. My name is Aniwa Ferrari. I'm the statewide coordinator for ASCWA down here at the Washington State Library, and I'm pleased to reintroduce our Reference 22 sessions. Some of you may remember it was a monthly session, the second Tuesday of every month, talking about interesting reference and virtual reference topics. It's been on hiatus for a little while, but we're pleased to get started again. And I'm very pleased to introduce Jen Robinson from the Seattle Public Library, who's going to talk to us today about serving teens and other difficult sorts of patrons. thanks for offering to do this, Jen, and go ahead and take it away.
Great, thanks. So as anyone mentioned, my name is Jen Robinson. Right now I work as a librarian in our General Reference Services Department downtown. I spend a good amount of my time doing chat, email, and text reference. In a former life, I used to be a teen services librarian, and I really loved working with teens. When I first moved downtown, I really worried about missing teens. What I did not know at the time was that they aren't all on chat. So, let's see here. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay, I'm going to listen. Okay, great.
You sound good,
Jen. We're talking into a microphone. So this is a purely fabricated example, of course. People can't interrupt you on a real chat. But I just wanted to start out as an example. Maybe there are people who haven't done chat before. This is a pretty stereotypical example of the cranky teen patron on chat. Okay. So first of all, I want to talk about why teens are so difficult on chat. Basically, teen brains are wildly different than our own. Their frontal lobes, which is the part of your brain that controls planning and judgment, is still developing. There's a big jump in that development around 11 or 12 years old. But even through the teen years, it's still developing. The amygdala, which is more in charge in the teen brain, is the part of the brain that controls reactions. So those reactions often will trump any rational thought. Teens are also building their own boundaries, especially those boundaries with strangers. They're learning the ideas of consequence and how cause and effect works with their actions. They also like to hunt in groups. I don't know how many of you guys have been on a chat shift where suddenly 10 kids all come in from the same class at once. You know, it's not exciting to do something by yourself, but if a bunch of other kids are doing it with you, it's a lot more exciting. So that's definitely something we deal with. And I think one of the most important things we're facing is that kids and teens have grown up using the internet. More importantly, they've grown up using mobile devices. They expect quick and really easy answers from us. So they're really demanding customers. Many adults are still in the shock and awe stage when it comes to chat. You know, the simplest thing is very exciting for them, but for teens, they're used to this. Many of them are quicker than us at using the internet, but they're not necessarily better. The last challenge we face with teens, I think, is that there's the novelty of talking to a stranger. That can go either way. Sometimes it makes teens act better. They'll be on their like grown-up best behavior, and they'll say thank you, ma'am, and be very proper. But it can also be a very tempting place for kids who know it's your job to be on chat. They'll take advantage of that. So why should we care? If teens are obnoxious on chat, why don't we just not help them or not serve them? I think it's really important, I have a little Whitney Houston note here, to remember that teens are the lawmakers, the advocates of the future. If we make a good, positive experience for them now, they're going to remember that. Even if they don't come back to libraries in their teens, when their parents, they'll take their kids to the library. When measures come up to support the library, they will have that good connotation. If they have a negative experience, they're never coming back. You know, people will mention the library and they will have really sour thoughts about us. So this is one of our few chances we have to make an impression. Something that teen librarians and other people working with teens talk a lot about is the 40 developmental assets. This is a set of kind of things that teens must learn or experience to be functioning good adults, and there's 40 of them. But working with teens hits a few of these really important ones, such as interpersonal competence, having good adult role models, establishing neighborhood boundaries, and as a member of the community, it's our responsibility to try and uphold these assets. And the most important thing we need to keep in mind is what teens have gone through to get to your situation you're sharing with them. Think about the whole process they went through. Someone told them about the service, probably a colleague of yours on a school visit or a librarian in a branch, but someone made the effort to get in touch with that teen, and that teen heard their message. They trusted the library enough to try this out. They trusted that we would help them with their question. We would listen to them. They pressed that button. They waited. Any of us who've logged in as patrons on chat know that even if the operator picks up right away, you're still waiting with no feedback for a good amount of time. So teens have gone through all of this before they get to you, and we need to acknowledge that and make it worth their while. So now I'm going to start on some of the strategies I've got to present to you. I want to leave a lot of time for Q&A at the end of this. We've all seen a lot, and I'm sure a lot of you have questions, especially if you're not used to working with teens. Let's see here. And I can slide my volume up a little bit as well here. Okay. So our first strategy is to be positive and engaged. I want you, when you realize you're talking to a teen, to take a really deep breath and really devote some psychic energy to this question. It's really easy to just assume that it's going to be a quick interaction or that they may log off at any second, so why invest? But I want you to rethink that when you know you've got a teen on the line. Immediately engage them. Say, that's a good question. I don't know the answer. Let's find it out. I think it's really important to make small talk. They can't see what you're doing, so try shooting out small talk like, so do you like this class, and have you guys been working on this for a while? This keeps the teen typing, it lessens their patience, and it shows you that they're interested in what you're both working on together. It doesn't take a lot of energy, and it goes a long way towards creating a lively and a really positive chat. Let's see here. Another strategy is to be in charge. It's important to give clear, easy-to-follow instructions. Think of this as the patron education portion of what you're doing. You're setting expectations for the teen. You want to tell them really simple things like, I want you to click on that envelope. I want you to enter your email address. Don't be afraid of repeating yourself at all. And as you can see in this last example, when you're setting expectations, you're making them feel secure. You're letting them know that you're going to answer all of their questions and that there's a process and that you're doing things in order, which will help alleviate if they're feeling impatient. So I think what's really key in a chat with a teen is you want to create and maintain a cycle of acknowledging and moving forward. You can repeat this over and over through the chat. It's essential to let them know that you're hearing what they're saying. So saying things like, thanks for being cool about waiting, I'm going to get to all of your questions, giving them things to do in the meantime, sending them links they can read while you're working on a deeper question is really helpful. I think it's important for them to know about the process. So if you can't answer their question right away, really hyping the idea that we can give them personalized help. You know, I call it personalized information wrangling or magical luxury treatment, where tell them how it works, that we take their question, we do a lot more research on it, and we're going to get back to them with an answer that's created especially for them. I think that makes them feel important and worthwhile. So we all know the type of chat patron. They seem to want to get their answer, but they keep wandering off topic completely. So here I'm just giving you some good examples of things you can say. I'm giving you specific phrases, but this is more so that you can see the neutral, friendly language that you can adapt. Nothing is going to work 100% of the time, but this will help you. Information robot. That was actually Toby. Toby had a kid. The kid asked him if he was a robot, and Toby just started acting like a robot. That was pretty fun. Remember, at the end, you always want to get them back to the task at hand. There's a cycle of acknowledging what they're asking. You know, don't ignore their questions, but say what you're going to say, and then move on. I know I get the word "you live" question a lot. And sometimes it's okay to answer that as long as you say, "Hey, Seattle," in a crazy, shiny building downtown, and then move on to the question. So this is assuming they actually have a question. Sometimes there is no question. Sometimes kids are just bored. They're bored a lot. They don't have anything to do. They want to be entertained. That's okay. I think the most important thing we can do is not shut teens down. Saying the service is for real questions only, I see that and it breaks my heart. It's important that we send them somewhere interesting. I've got some cool links in my appendix that you can look at. There's no need to type anything about this being for real questions only. Instead, leave the door open for them to come back when they have something they want to know. Send them a funny link, sign off, maybe they'll come back when they have a more substantial question. So now we have some specifics. I know everyone has had, at some point, the national queue at like 3 p.m. on a Sunday. There's all kinds of homework that kids haven't done. You don't know what school they're from. If you were in a real library, you could ask to see their homework assignment, just say hand it over. You can't do that on chat. Oftentimes you don't have any context at all for what they're talking about. So here are some things you can try and do. I also think it's important to get the kids invested. If you had a kid in front of you asking a question, you would ask them what they thought about their paper. If they have a pro and con paper, I always ask them, hey, did you get to choose which side you're writing about? Ask what they think of things. If it's an opinion paper, ask what their opinion is going to be or what their thesis is going to be. And I don't know how many librarians here have access to homework help through their libraries, but I always immediately search to see if your library has homework help. That thing is invaluable, and we spend a lot of money on it. So I always push that. I'll say something like, you know, they know a lot more about this topic than I do, or trust me, if algebra is your topic, you do not want me helping you. I also let them know that they need their library card, and I make sure to tell them the hours that homework help is available. Nothing worse than pawning them off on that and then having it not be open. So, see. Okay, crowd control. I wrote this slide after we'd had two or three classrooms full of kids coming in all at once asking questions, and there was only one of us on chat, which got to be really, really hectic. So these are some strategies you can use if you've got a bunch of kids on at once. I think the first thing you want to do is quickly think of a strategy. If it's only you, think of ways to kind of triage the questions. And don't be afraid to talk to the kids. Ask them if they're in a class. Ask them if they're working in small groups. If you're seeing five or six of the same question, tell them to get into groups. Use that authority. They might not question you. Tell them to get into groups and ask their questions all crowded around one computer. If they have time left in their class, tell them to wait 5 minutes and ask a question after their friend has asked a question. You can also send them questions, the answers later on in the email. I also think it's important to let them know if you're alone. I know they have no concept of the logistics of chat. I had one kid think I was in the next room. So for all they know, they're getting on a screen and like 1,000 trained monkeys are on the other end, which is not the case, hopefully. So let them know you're by yourself, you're not a robot, you can only do one question at a time, and appeal to their generosity as human beings. Okay. So here we have the chatterers. These are the kids that are just talking about nothing to do with the library at all. They don't have a question. They don't want your link. They just want to talk about their boyfriend. I think it's really important, again, to listen to what the teens are saying. If they really, really seem like they need to talk about something, if it's kind of a heavy subject, or if they just seem really lonely and like they need to talk to somebody, TeenLink is a great resource. It's free. It's partnered with the Crisis Clinic. It's staffed by teens. Volunteer teens are on the phone all the time, and callers can talk about anything they need to talk about. So I would